Thank you for joining us for live paranormal radio. From the paranormal to the unexplained, it all happens here.
It all happens here.
Looking to enhance your radio experience? Participate in our live video chat 24/7 with our live paranormal radio show hosts and other like-minded people. Live. Paranormal.com, the only interactive social chat room supported by Full Interaction Media. Stop by now and join the fun.
Stop by now and join the fun.
It's Raising the Vibration right here on the Live Paranormal Radio Network. I'm your host, Sheena Metal. I'm a psychic medium. I'm an interfaith minister. And I'm a 27-year talk radio host in Los Angeles. And this is Raising the Vibration. I'm at SheenaMetalSpiritual.com, the show is at RaisingTheVibrationRadio.com, and, of course, the network at LiveParanormal.com. Raising the Vibration is an offshoot, an outreach of a movement of peace, love, kindness, and unity, RaisingTheVibration.org, that I founded in 2016 to carry on my mama's teachings, both spiritual and humane, after her passing. So this show is really where my heart lives, and it means a lot to me to be here with you all today. Every week on the show, we talk about four things: ascending, evolving, inspiring, and loving. Those are the cornerstone words for this show. How are you raising your vibration? How are you evolving spiritually? How are you using both of those things to inspire others? And what are you doing to love more and put more love into the world? And my guest today certainly knows a lot about all of that. She's a wonderfully talented speaker, author, paranormal survivor, ufologist, all-around fantastic person who I recently got to spend a couple of days in Joshua Tree, California with, looking for off-world friends, interdimensional beings, earth spirits, and more. Please welcome to the show one of my dearest in the whole world, the amazing Andrea Perrin joins me today, and it's so wonderful to have her here on the show. Annie, it's great to be here with you, my friend.
Oh, sweetheart. Oh, my sweetheart, it was wonderful to see you again. Oh, I mean, I feel so spoiled because we were together about, maybe 6-8 weeks ago we were together. And when I was out in L.A. And then, boom, you know, here I'm coming back to L.A., which was much sooner than I expected. And, you know, once I got out of the crazy La La Land city and got out into the desert, you know, I was able to achieve a little peace of mind because the traffic was insane. You know, when you got there, I was laying down in my little yurt wannabe, at the location where we were filming this documentary, and I so wanted you to be a part of that, that you were able to rearrange your life to come out and join us.
Sure.
And you know, hop on film and do your thing. Was amazing. I can't wait for people to see this. And, you know, I got my little text message that said, I'm here. I'm like, oh, God, I can't move. It's like 150 degrees outside. I can't move. but I did. I actually moved. And, I'm still getting grit and sand out of my hair. But, you know, other than that, hey, we got to see some pretty cool stuff, too. You remember, I don't know if you saw the whole family of quail. Yeah, we had a whole family, a mommy and a daddy and all the babies of the quail and two roadrunners that were hanging out together. Oh. And, you know, fortunately, no tarantulas, but or scorpions. They managed to stay away from us. But my last night, I was in the big yurt. I was in the big round one, which was so spacious and cool and breezy. It was so nice. And about 3 o'clock in the morning, the coyotes went nuts. I mean, it sounded like they were right outside my door. And so, of course, you know me, I'm not afraid. So I got up and I opened the door and I was like, you know what, you guys, just knock it off. People are trying to sleep. Dead silence. Oh, God, I can't believe they actually listened to me, or I scared them once. Oh, it was wild. Did I lose you?
I love that. I love that story. Yeah, we had a connection thing for a minute. Yeah, it was magic. And it was funny. I was driving out of that area that you drive down Joshua Tree through Yucca and then down into the 10 where you hit the Palm Springs area, right? And India.
Right.
And I was thinking to myself that Joshua Tree, I had never been there. And I have to tell you, Joshua Tree is like my Sedona. I love Sedona.
Yeah.
But when I went to Sedona, I didn't feel that way people feel about Sedona, like I can't wait to get back to Sedona. I've been twice, and I love it. I was there to see friends mm-hmm. who were holding a spiritual conference. But Joshua mm-hmm. Tree, I had trouble leaving, and I've thought about nothing but going back since I've been home.
Wow. Yeah, it was really amazing. It was, I don't know. There were cameras everywhere. I mean, I don't know about you, but when I walked into that house that Tuesday night and to the main house, it looked like a Hollywood studio had just deposited all of its equipment on the floor of that house.
Absolutely.
And Jay Blemke was there. Michael Mazzola was there. You know, we had our producers. We had our director. We had, you know, so many people, so many wonderful souls came together for this.
Yes.
Event.
Wonderful.
Yep, it really was. You could feel the energy. You could feel, you know, the high spirits, and everybody that was involved with it was felt so honored to be and so embraced, and, you know, like they were making a special contribution.
Yeah.
It was really a remarkable thing. And, you know, I think that ultimately, I'm not going to be in charge of its production, of course. I'm not going to be in charge of the editing. There are people who know what they're doing that are doing that. But I just know that when this documentary is ready to go out into the world, that it is going to shock and stun people. Because I don't even know what they caught that was going on overhead, you know. I'm not sure where the cameras were pointed. There were so many cameras. But I remember there were several times the second night where everybody that was there said, oh, my God, at the same time. And that was enough for me, just that the entire group saw the same thing at the same time in a sky that big truly significant, and I just floated home. I mean, I didn't even need a jetliner to come home. I could have just, you know, floated. It was really an amazing thing. And, you know, I slept for 8 hours over 3 days. I mean, we filmed for probably 24 hours of the time that we were out there, which was about 34 hours maybe. And we were filming for 24 of those hours. And so I don't know what was captured. I don't know what got said on film. I don't know. I'm going to be as surprised as anybody else when I see the finished product. But you did a wonderful
–
all I heard from my producers was what a wonderful person you are and what an incredible job you did. And you did an interview and you did – some earth spirit stuff. And I mean, it was just amazing.
Yeah.
You were amazing.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. Michael said, welcome to the family, and asked me if I wanted to start like having dinners and stuff with the gang in LA. So you will be missed when we do that, but I'm excited because it's a really good group of people. And I certainly felt that when I first filmed the episode of your upcoming television show. But this mm-hmm. is just such a good group of people that you've brought me to, and I'm so thankful for that. I have to ask you something, though. Do you feel the energy now coming out of the ground? Did you feel that there?
Yes. Yep, I did. And, you know, most people would look at that ground and say, there's nothing living in this. Nothing could. It's just dirt. But I literally felt the ground shifting underneath my feet, and it was not an earthquake. It was something else. There was a healing energy there. There was an ancient energy there. The Yucca Valley and the Joshua trees, you know, that's the only place that they exist on Earth. And
right, and in the Mojave Desert. Yeah, because you see them on the way to Vegas.
Yeah,
yeah, that's the only place they are.
Yeah, and
isn't that wonderful?
Like, nobody knows where they came from, you know? It's like the Petoskey Stones up in Northwest Michigan. It's the only place on Earth that you can find these stones. Earth is magical.
I ask because I know sometimes when you and I talk, and you're like, oh, L.A., I could never live there. Grumble, grumble, grumble. Andrew goes to Florida. But the energy in Joshua Tree, I feel that energy all under Los Angeles. It's the same Mojave Desert energy, you know? And you just have to listen for it under all the concrete and the cars and the people and the narcissism. You have to listen for that energy. But it's that energy that keeps me staying where I am. And for a girl who's always grown up on the ocean and lives on the ocean now, I am just obsessed with that desert. And I've always loved Vegas because I love that desert. And now that I found Joshua Tree, I think I'm going to do like a big spiritual retreat out there. I think I'm going to go out there and teach some folks and bring some folks out there and, you know, try to find a place that has some air conditioning.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you know, the place did have air conditioning until it said, oh, my God, it's too hot for me to work anymore. It was brutal. It really was.
Yeah, it was bad.
It was. But, you know, it's okay. I adjusted. I mean, when it went down into the 90s at night, I was like, oh, this feels so refreshing. It's amazing. It really is amazing how fast human beings adjust to our environment,
exactly.
You know, how we acclimate to the climate.
I could have sworn that I'm not good with heat. I was worried about it, but I was okay, and I think that was just the spiritual magic. And I don't know, I swear we sat in the shade the whole time, but I was burnt to a crisp the next day. So I don't know how
too.
That happened, because I swear I sat
me
in the
either.
Shade. That Mojave sun managed to get us.
Yep, it still did. But the drive-in, oh my God, the drive-in. And I was wondering how your really cool car was going to take that last leg of the trip. I was like, oh, God,
my
car is kind of low to the ground. Whoa. Yeah.
I know. I was sitting there thinking, should I be driving my Mercedes on a dirt road for 2 miles? And the funny thing is, on the way out, I got lost.
Oh, no kidding.
I knew how I came, but I wasn't paying attention, and the lady that lives in the Waze program was trying to tell me I was going the wrong way, but I thought I knew better because human beings are just smart enough to be dangerous, and I wound up taking a 40-minute – I think I was halfway to Victorville when I realized I had to turn around and go back.
Oh, honey.
So I got to see a lot of dark in the middle of nowhere.
Yep, but you saw some beautiful, beautiful landscapes, too. I know you did. It was breathtaking.
I saw some pitch black. So tell me something, because you were talking about Earth spirits earlier. When you talk about off-worlders, and I know you see a lot of things that come from the sky, right?
Yes.
But how do you feel about interdimensionals? I mean, they obviously don't come from the sky. They come from take a step this way, take a step that way, and you're there. But are they still, to you, considered off-worlders? Does someone have to actually come down from the sky to be an off-worlder, or do you consider interdimensionals off-worlders as well?
I really do. You know, I think that all the dimensions are tangled like hair. And boy, I had some tangled hair after that trip too. I'll tell you what. the wind, the dust, oh my God, I had to get out the Bayori pore strips. Because I was sweating and everything was sticking to my face, and I don't know how many times I had to wash off what was left of my makeup and reapply it. You know, it's like I was really at the point where I was like, you know, screw this. I'm, you know, who cares? Nobody cares if they see me in makeup or not. Who cares? I don't know, and I don't think that anybody could legitimately answer that question. I think that everything is intermingled, and you know, like people when they think of UFOs or they think of extraterrestrials, they think something that's out there that's coming here. And I don't think that that's necessarily the case either. I think that they're as familiar with this planet as we are, and that they've been here as long, if not longer, than we've been. And there are, you know, 57 documented, chronicled encounters with different races, 57 different races that have been acknowledged, identified, and chronicled on planet. So they are, you know, I know when I run into one, I know, I feel it. It's visceral. It is absolutely visceral. I just know this is somebody that's not from here. And, you know, naturally I'm like, oh, hi. Oh, hello.
Sure.
Let's be best friends. Let's be besties. You know, it's, every now and then I'll run into somebody that I'm quite certain is from the angelic realm. I'm absolutely certain that they are. There's, you can look at them and there's a purity and a light around them and a beauty that transcends human form, and yet they appear to be a human being. But I know that there are angels among us, and I think that angels are a race of extraterrestrials. They're just, you know, one of many different I feel absolutely certain of that. I've been messaged about that. That yes, they are among the different beings that circumnavigate our globe in numbers that are impossible to wrap our minds around.
Sure. Now, when you talk about running into one, are you talking about like a hybrid, like a human angelic hybrid, or a human extraterrestrial hybrid? Or are you talking about an actual extraterrestrial being that's sort of wearing a human costume?
Yeah, I think it's more that, but I'm not certain, you know, and it would be disingenuous of me to say, oh, yeah, I know exactly, you know, I don't. And for as many messages and as many downloads as I receive, you know, I should have the answers to all of these questions. So if I don't, then I'm not supposed to, not yet anyway. But I do know enough that I can feel other human beings. You know, I'll give you a case in point. I was years and years ago, I was crossing the Washington Bridge across the Blackstone River, going home from work in Rhode Island. And as I turned left onto Menden Road, something told me to turn around and look behind me. And the last car that was still behind me on the road as I made my turn, there was a being, there was a young man in that car that had the bluest eyes I've ever seen and blonde hair and the sweetest, sweetest face. He almost looked like a child. But he was a full-grown man, and I turned around, and he smiled at me and winked, like, okay, you heard me. I'm just keeping an eye on you, you know, and I just felt this rush, this just rush of love, like I wanted to pull over and just say, pull over, pull over. I just want to touch you. I just want to hug you and hold you, and, I mean, it was just this instant love connection that I felt with this man, and he was so beautiful. He didn't even have any right to be a man. He should have been a woman. He was that beautiful. And it was, I mean, this all happened within 10 seconds, just 10 seconds. And then I just, my house was three houses up on the left, and I pulled in and I turned around because I knew he had turned, you know, right after I did and turned left, but I didn't see him. The car was gone. He was not there. And it was not a busy time of day. I looked up, I looked down the road. There was no sign of the car, no sign of him. It was just gone. And yet I watched him make the turn after I did. It was just the strangest thing. And one time I was picking up a couple of friends at Logan Airport. Don't ever do that unless you absolutely have to. Logan is avoid it like the black plague of Europe. That's all I have to say about Logan Airport. But anyway, I was picking up a couple of friends there. It was years and years ago. And I had just had my heart shattered by someone that thought that it was perfectly okay to lie to me, perfectly okay to misrepresent, you know, their background history, marital status, et cetera. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I was just devastated. And I'm picking up my friends and I'm standing there and I'm crying in the arms of my friend Barbara, not only because I was so happy to see her and her husband, but because I just needed a hug like I had never needed a hug before. And this very tall, beautiful man walks up, very tall, like tall, white, tall, and walks up to me and he said, he just leaned over and he spoke to me, and he didn't overhear anything that I had said to her. He didn't know why I was crying, but he did. And he said to me, "You lived long enough to feel true love, and many people never, ever do. So just be grateful for that." And then he walked away.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
And
that happens,
you know,
right?
He had,
that's But do you think they're incarnate? I mean, are they actually a non-human being, or are they a human being with the traits of whatever extraterrestrial race they come from? I mean, I think we all have extraterrestrial DNA in us. But, I mean, I think some more than others, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We all have the base stuff, but some people addition to that.
Yeah, he was not spirit in nature. He was absolutely flesh and blood with a briefcase and a piece of luggage.
Yes. Well, that's
and
how you know.
Was, yes. You know, and so, yeah, I mean, he was weight-bearing. You know, if he could pick up his
stuff
that he had traveled with. But he also was, as I like to say, in this world, but not of this world. And that's why.
Isn't that interesting? Yeah.
Yeah. And that's why I wrote in my last book a whole chapter about angels among us. Because I think that miracles do exist and that it is real. There's just far, far too many examples of people's lives that were inexorably altered by someone that just showed up out of nowhere. And so I don't know how they travel or what the task at hand is, or if he was there just simply to say that to me, or he felt my vibration and he felt my heart breaking and felt that he had to intervene on my behalf and say something. But I will never forget. I will never forget the look on his face, the pure empathy. I mean, just, it was like he could feel my pain. No. I have only encountered that with one other soul on this planet, and that's John Tenney. He was there for me the day that my sister April died. And he held me as though he was literally trying to absorb the pain out of my body, out of my mind, to just take it on himself. And I will never forget that either. And, you know, John's as real as you are, as I am. John's absolutely real, absolutely a human being, and yet touched by a force and a dynamic and something truly angelic and pure and perfect. And I've never met another man like him. He is truly rarefied, like a gem from inner earth.
Yeah. Yeah. I think some people carry a lot more of home with them than others.
Yeah. Yep.
You know what I mean?
I do too. Yep, I do. And, you know, and I think that you and I seem to embody that as well. I remember so well the first time that we met, which was that same weekend. Even though we had spoken before, I had done your show, you know, we knew each other over the phone, over the computer. But to hold you in my arms for the first time, to feel your light, to see it first and then feel it, was absolutely inspiring to me. And you said the same thing to me. It was an instantaneous connection. It was an ancient connection. It was a certain knowing that had such a history to it that it's hard to put into words, isn't it, honey? It's hard to put that into words.
It is.
And you know, it's
and
like
I'll, and I'll
we
tell you
have
something.
To.
I'll tell you something, and I don't ever want to correct anything you say because I love and respect you, but we had never had any contact before we met.
No. Are you kidding me? Are you sure?
Yes, I'm absolutely sure. When Chip introduced
us, oh my God.
I had never met you. We weren't even Facebook friends.
No,
yeah.
Kidding. Oh, my God.
Know
now, see, I
be there.
Oh, wow.
I kind of
wow.
Find myself when Chip's in town and he's free to go see him because I never get to see Chip Coffee. And I love him like a brother. And he said, will you come? And it was the year anniversary of my mother's death, and I didn't want to go anywhere or see anyone. And had a lovely text fight with her lousy neighbor, whose house I'm looking at right now, by the way. And he said, you have to come. And I said, okay, I'll come. And I wanted to come, and I wanted to meet Amy Bruni and Adam Berry because they had done my show, and I'd never met them. And I thought, you know, this is the right thing to go and do this. And then when I got there, and he was downstairs, I think they had just gotten there. I think he was just checking in. He was outside where the valet is, and he was smoking, and I went and sat next to him. And that's when he told me that you were there and that he had wanted me to come to meet you and that that your sister had just passed.
Wow.
And that was the first time we met. And you were sitting on one of those little concrete things out by the valet looking very distraught, and I just went over and sat down next to you. And that's what I do.
Well, I don't remember
that. When I see somebody sad, I go strike up a conversation.
Wow. Wow.
How about that?
isn't that amazing? So you mean like all the rest of the stuff that I remember is happening before April's
happened after.
Passing happened mm-hmm. after. Wow.
Happened after.
Holy cow.
Uh-huh. Isn't that interesting?
Well,
you built a backstory,
well, isn't
baby.
That? Yeah. Well, no,
I
isn't
that's
so strange.
I only say it because I think it makes it an even better story to know that we had no contact with each other.
Wow. See, now I remember Chip saying to me, I want you to meet my friend Sheena. It's really
uh-huh.
important that I put the two of you together. I remember that.
Yeah,
and
he said
that
the same
whole
thing
weekend.
To me. Yeah.
Yeah, was very much of a blur. to me. It really was.
Yes, I'm sure.
But I remember that we sat across from each other. We all went out to lunch together on the ship. And there were about 10 of us.
Dinner.
Greta was there, Rebecca, dinner. Yeah, Mike was there and his mom. You know, a number of close friends. And I sat across from you, and I don't think I took my eyes off you. I don't think I even looked down at my food. I just shoveled it into my mouth. I just couldn't take my eyes
I'm
off
captivating.
You are. Right. You are. And we had this really intense conversation. I mean, it was so heartfelt, and we talked to each other as though we had known each other forever and ever. Amen. I mean, it was truly inspiring to me. It truly was.
But
I can't believe I didn't know you. Are you sure? Are you sure I never did your show or anything?
Nope.
Wow.
That's the
answer.
I'm sure.
Wow.
Totally sure.
So we've known each other for like 5 years, but 5,000 also. Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
5 years plus 5,000. Exactly.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Well,
at least 5,000.
All I know is that you couldn't get me off of you now like stepping on gum in the Mojave Desert that just sticks into your shoe and gets caught in all the ridges and then gets, you know, like covered in sand and baked into concrete. I mean, you just could not shake me now, baby. You could not shake me now.
That's fantastic. Good. I have an interesting story, like your story about your man at the airport.
Yeah.
So my mom had this fear of her car breaking down and being stuck in the middle of nowhere.
Uh-huh.
And then one day,
don't we all?
As life had when she was older, her car got stuck. I mean, it wasn't in the middle of nowhere, but it was where I grew up in Huntington Beach, still wasn't all developed, and it was a place where it would have been a couple miles for her to walk out of it, and she was not in any shape with her knees. So she called AAA, and they told her like 45 minutes. And about 10 minutes later, this big, giant, sparkly, all-white tow truck drives up next to her. And this guy gets out, right? He's about 6-plus feet tall, you know, built like an Adonis, super light blue eyes, super light blonde hair, beautiful smile. And he walks up to her, and he knows her name. And he says, "Hi, Lena. What's the problem?" And she said, "My battery's dead." And he said, "Are you sure?" And she said, "Absolutely. There's nothing. The battery's dead." And he said, let me just try something." She said he got in the car, and he just touched the keyhole, and the car comes to life. And he says, "Well, I think all your problems are solved." And he gives her a big hug and gets in the car and drives off. So my mom calls AAA to thank them for sending this beautiful man. And as soon as they pick up the phone, they say, "Oh, my God, we're so sorry. We're having really busy conditions, and we couldn't get somebody there yet, and we apologize." And she says, "No, the guy was just here." And they said, no, we have a driver coming, but he's 30 minutes out." So there you go. And if that story wasn't strange enough, because, you know, I always say the story about when my mom saw the extraterrestrial in the basement.
Yeah.
The story itself is weird, but the really weird story is when we moved halfway across the country and she read in the paper about somebody else who'd seen the same guy. I'm telling this story once to my friend who lives in Montana.
Mm-hmm.
And he tells me this story about how he was driving his kid to school and he's coming back in the snow. He's like, he's in nothing but his underpants and a T-shirt. And his car breaks down in the middle of the snowstorm and he calls his wife. And his wife says, "It's going to take me this long to get to you." So he's sitting in the car with the heater on, waiting for someone to show up while the snow's coming down. And lo and behold, he looks to his left, and there's this giant white tow truck. And the guy says, "Hey, Wayne, how are you?" So it knew his name. Looked like the guy with my mom, right? Same story.
Yeah.
Same in the car, touched something. The car worked fine. The guy drove off. Never heard him again. He, as a matter of fact, he went to go look in the tow truck. He saw the tow truck start to move away, and then he went to look, and it had disappeared. It wasn't even there anymore.
Yeah.
So is there some kind of, travel angel that comes and rescues people? Do you know what I mean? I mean, one time, it's a one-off, but there's these beautiful, gorgeous Adonises and white pickup trucks rescuing people, and they know your name.
Yeah.
That just can't be an accident, right?
No, it's not. No, it's not. And, for me, any scientist that heard me say this would say, no, that's not how it works, Andrea. But I am telling you that when credible people tell incredible stories like this, for me, that qualifies as empirical evidence. No, it doesn't have to be proven in a laboratory setting. It's as real to everyone who has had encounters like this as anything else. And yet these little brief little interludes, these little incidents that occur that some would attribute to being guardian angels, and maybe they are, I think it's very interesting that we just told a series of stories about being rescued or watched over by tall, blonde, blue-eyed, gorgeous smile, Adonis-like men. Now, there's your common denominator right there. There it is. Now, and I think that they're probably off-worlders. Yep. They're probably, tall whites that take on a human form and interact among us and keep an eye on us and watch over us. The song Someone to Watch Over Me has extraordinary significance in my life. It's not a romantic song. It's more a spiritual encounter. And I just think it's absolutely beautiful. I've included it in my my cosmic playlist of songs that have particular profundity when it comes to my interactions with the galactic family, of which I am exceedingly grateful to them, because when things get tough, the last conversation, by the way, my darling, the last conversation that we had on your air, I'm tempted to say I'm sorry, but I know that you would not accept that.
Of course I wouldn't. You're right.
I was in dark space. I was, and I don't even know what prompted it, but I think that it's okay for people to hear that all of us suffer. And I know it had to do with COVID, and it had to do with, something that's going on planet that I feel helpless to fix and hopeless about. I don't even remember exactly. I remember the feeling of just wanting to give up, just, throw my hands in the air and say, what's the point? I'm not making any difference on this planet. This is not working out for me. I don't belong here. Why am I here? I was, going through one of those spells, and I almost backed out on the interview, but I couldn't, I just couldn't do that to you. Excuse me. I couldn't do that to you. When I make a commitment, I keep it. But I also can't lie to you. I can't lie to anybody. And so I had to just be who I was in that hour of my life. And I was in really dark space and feeling overwhelmed and just this side of hopeless. And I want you to know, without even having to revisit the conversation, that you lifted me up unlike anyone else ever has. You pulled me up and out of that abyss, out of that dark hole that I had descended into, and brought me back to life with pure love. And I will be eternally grateful, because I can't remember a time that I was so depressed. And it, you know, I do my best, as you do all the time, to be there for other people, to help lift others up wherever we see someone who is downtrodden emotionally, physically, financially, what, you know, whatever it is that is holding them down like a boulder on their shoulders. And I needed you to do that for me that night, and you did. So if there is anyone out there that's listening who might have heard that show, I just want them to know that you lifted my spirits and raised my vibration and brought me back to light and life in an hour that night of a conversation that I think was truly important to have, my darling, because other people need to know that we're not above it all. You know, that we suffer with them. You know, this is that we truly are all in this together. And I know a friend of mine had just lost her mother, and, you know, we were very close. I was very close, am very close with her whole family. So I was feeling, you know, the profound loss of that treasured life, that precious life. And I was feeling very much like, you know, COVID's ahead of us, and I just don't think that we're going to make the right decisions societally to overcome this, that for some reason, and I cannot explain it, we're going to have to suffer more to learn our lesson in soul school. It's been difficult. You know, this last 18, 20 months has been a little bit of hell on earth, but I feel like in some way we're turning a corner. In some way we are. And for me, being out in the desert with you and with those wonderful people and seeing what we saw overhead that night and feeling what we felt right on the planet with us, all that we captured and all that we shared, I should have come home like an overcooked piece of pasta, like extrusion. What is the word when stuff literally boils down and breaks into, you know, disparate parts. I came back feeling absolutely inspired, and that we had done something really important. Did you feel that too?
Oh God, yes. I was completely elated. So exhausted.
Yep, that's an excellent word.
So,
yep.
So swollen, because the desert makes everything on me swell up.
Yeah,
I'm
me
like
too. I was
happy. But feeling so beautiful.
I came home like the Stay Puft. I was the Stay Puft marshmallow man. I was just bloated.
Yeah.
And I think it's like, okay, it's because I drank 16 gallons of water while I was out there. But, it wasn't that. It was just, I get puffy in the heat.
I get puffy in the desert. The first day I was there at the hotel, I couldn't figure out what was wrong with me. And then I remembered that when I was young and my band would play in Vegas, I would always get like that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just a thing, right? But no, I came back and said to myself on that drive, like I said to you, Joshua Tree is my Sedona. this is the place yeah. that I want to come back to again, to connect and to teach and to hug those damn trees that I've always been obsessed with, but I've never touched one. I've always seen them driving back and forth to Vegas, but I've never stopped and actually touched one before. It's a whole other mm-hmm. thing to touch them. It's a trip.
Isn't it? They're like Chewbacca. They are. It's like they have fur. Oh, they're amazing, and they're symbiotic. There's a special kind of moss that gets the seed pods or the, you know, there's kind of the moths lay their eggs in the yucca in the Joshua tree. And then, I don't know, you have to research it. My sister was reading it to me, and she's like, oh, my God. And I said, Christine, I am telling you, it's like they're all really roughly the same size. You don't see baby Joshua trees everywhere. They should be. I don't know. They're all like 500-600 years old.
I did see some babies. I was driving the first day, I think I was driving from Yucca through Joshua Tree, because I like to get the lay of the land when I get somewhere. And I found a neighborhood, a residential neighborhood on the way, the road that you take up, you know, to go to Joshua National Park. And mm-hmm. a bunch of people had little ones. They were growing in their lawns, and they were maybe like not even a foot high.
Oh, wow. Oh, that's good.
But they still looked old. They still looked old. They looked
yeah.
like Yoda. They were tiny, but they still looked 500 years old.
Oh, God, they're amazing, amazing.
Yeah, they are wonderful, and I'm so honored to have taken that adventure with you and so thankful to you to have been the one that finally got me to drag my butt to Joshua Tree when everybody had tried to convince me to go. And now I can't wait to go back. I keep thinking about how to get back.
Yeah, it was truly life-altering. It was. Well, the next time that I come out to L.A., I have to be out there for about a week. And then I believe I'm coming out in January for about 3 weeks. So we'll slip away while I'm, you know, doing the other show. I've got like 6 projects going at once, which is ridiculous, but I do. But, you know, we'll slip away and take a day trip, like, you know, leave before the traffic, come back after the traffic, and go out and explore. You know, here's the thing. You know, I'm a little verklempt because, you know, I grew up on George Jetson and Jane, his wife, and their boy Elroy. And, you know, George Jetson said we would have hovercrafts. You know,
yeah.
Well, why don't we have hovercrafts? You know, mm-hmm. do you know how easy it would be to just go into your backyard and hop inside your hovercraft and just, you know, go up 50, 100 feet and drive over all the maniacs that are in cars, you know, pick
right.
up a little speed, 400 or 500 miles an hour. We'd be out there in 10 minutes. And just land in the dirt and park the hovercraft and enjoy the view. Oh, what a sunset, huh? What a spot we had. Surrounded by mountains. Absolutely surrounded by mountains. I got some great photographs.
Yeah.
Yep.
Truly one of the most beautiful things I've ever seen in my life. That was the sunset and the night. Guy just buzzing with craft, with
UFO craft. Yeah, it was really incredible. I was out at, well, after I told the coyotes to hush, and they did, which was shocking to me because I figured they just either come out and eat me or they just keep doing what they were doing. All of a sudden, I looked up in the sky, and, you know, nobody was up. Nobody was there. It was just me. And I looked up in the sky, and I saw something that at first just appeared to be another star. It appeared completely stationary. And then it started to move, and it moved right directly across the entire sky directly overhead, took its sweet time doing it, like it was navigating through the Milky Way. And the last thing I said was, you know, why couldn't you do that when I had a couple of dozen people here that would have enjoyed this? You know, where were you when I needed you to be here to do this? This was the one thing I wanted you to do. And all of a sudden it just flashes at me and poof, it's gone. You know, so they're laughing at me. They make fun of me all the time. They do. It's just not right. But, you know, I know there were several times that everybody was, you know, sitting in their chairs in a circle in the sand. And Serena had done her meditation, which was lovely. And there were several times that everybody saw something at the same time. And I love when that happens. I love when that happens because the sky out there is so huge that it's very easy for the human eye to just settle on a sector of the sky. And that's why I try to you know, train people to look at the sky as a whole, even though our range of vision is limited, to take in as much of it as you can, like you're looking at a computer screen from up, down, side to side, and everything is blurred. You know, you're just looking at the whole thing at one time. And then whenever there is movement or a light anomaly or something, that human eye will go directly to it and register it. So that's part of how I teach people how to interact and engage with the galactic family. And to, you know, kind of shut off everything that's going on from the neck up and just feel them. Just, you know, this is a heart chakra activity. It is not cerebral in nature. At least it's not for me. And so I figure if it works for me, it'll work for others. Oh, there's the kitty. There's the kitty. I heard the kitty.
She's
no, Peanut. It's a kitty in California, honey. As soon as I said that, my dog went flying off the bed going to look for the kitty. Honey, it's Peanut. It's a kitty in California. It's, you know.
She has an intestinal infection. So I have to give her. And she is not happy. And she's, I moved her down to the beach because this is where I mostly am now, so I want her here with me. And I was worried that she was going to pass because she's almost, she'll be 18 on Halloween. And they said, well, let's do some blood work and see what it looks like. So I'm waiting for the blood work to come back, saying my goodbyes and getting ready to have an Irish wake. And they came back and her blood work, mine should be so good, this cat. Every single thing on her blood work is 3 pages of blood work is perfect. She's 85 years people years. She doesn't have a spot on her. Except she's a Scorpio, so she's actually angry.
Yeah.
There she is, live on the radio. And your poor doggy's like, what is it?
Yep, I know. She's sitting here staring at the phone like, well, she thinks the phone is all magical, too, because when I'm away and I call home and, you know, they put it on speakerphone, dad does or mom does or whoever's got her while I'm away, and we'll put it on speakerphone, and I talk to her, and she just goes ballistic and tries to lick the phone and crawl inside the phone, and she doesn't understand that I'm not actually physically in the phone. So we're working on that. We're working on explaining that to my ultra-intelligent chihuahua.
I have a photo from when I was in Joshua Tree with you of my 4-month-old kitten staring at my girlfriend's phone when one of my live videos was on. And he has his little paws on each side of the phone. And he's just looking wistfully at the, at, you know, there's mommy and why is she in this box? I'll send it to you when we get done with the show. I'll send it to you. It's the cutest thing you've ever seen in your life. And you know how on Facebook Live, people send hearts and they send, and my partner called me. She's like, he's trying to catch the heart on the screen. So I can't wait till he sees this girl because he's been down here and she's been up there. So as soon as she's better, they get to meet, and he's going to get a new big sister. And that's going to be very exciting.
Very exciting. Oh, that's wonderful.
They're the most magic things in the world. You two are magic,
they
my
are.
Friend, and I thank you so much for being here with me. Where can people find you online, and will you come and do this with me again?
Absolutely, and everywhere. I'm everywhere. Just Google my name. There I am.
Wonderful. Thank you, my friend, for being here, and let's do this soon. I adore you.
I adore you, sweetheart. Good night.
Thank you for everything, and I'll see you again soon when you're back out here.
Okay.
The wonderful Andrea Perrin, everybody. Isn't she terrific? If you missed any of the links, you can go to CheetahMetalSpiritual.com. That's for me and all your spiritual and paranormal services that I provide, and anything you want to know about me and my shows. There's a wonderful chorus with my beautiful Oracle cat behind me. Raising the Vibration Radio for this show, LiveParanormal.com for the network tonight at 9 o'clock Pacific time. I'll be on Live Paranormal's video channel doing my weekly I Am Raising Your Vibration show at Facebook.com/TheLiveParanormal. And we'll see you all again next week at 5 o'clock Pacific time for Raising the Vibration. And tomorrow night, I do my Haunted Playground radio show here on the Live Paranormal Radio Network at 6 o'clock Pacific time, followed by Haunted Playground After Dark at 9 on the Live Paranormal Video Network. Check me out at CheetahMetalSpiritual.com, RaisingTheVibrationRadio.com, my nonprofit, RaisingTheVibration.org, and, of course, LiveParanormal.com. Till I see you next week, seek peace, live in love, lead with kindness, embrace unity, and always, my friends, always, wherever you may be, find a way to raise your vibration. I'm Sheena Metal. I'll see you next time. I love you all. Thank you for listening.